Blog Talk Radio.
All right, she now disappears. You're looking
okay.
at her again. Yeah. So I also want to send people to your book or to any place that you would like people to go to you. So you tell me where that is, but I may ask you a few times to tell the audience. Where would be the follow-up if they want to know more about what you're doing?
Comeandreason.com. It's my website, comeandreason.com.
Okay. And the other thing is, I think you know, we're not a religious show, we're not a proselytizing show, but at some point I will ask you about spirituality and how it integrates in all of this. Is that okay?
Sure. Absolutely.
Okay. So the first question, though, I'm going to ask you about is what you said, and that is we do have a tendency to think of people necessarily having dementia or senility just because of their age. And what's one of the reasons we don't want to age? So you'll hear that, and that'll be a good door opener for you, okay?
Perfect.
Great. We're ready to rock and roll, Stuart, so now we have to be quiet. Okay, go ahead. Hello, hello, hello. They played the music. I apologize for that. You confused me. Maybe we should have. I don't know. Go ahead, go ahead. Let's do phone a meeting back in.
When I look in the mirror, I don't see wrinkles. When I look in the mirror, I see hair on my head, not my shoulder.
And hello, hello, hello. This is Adrienne Berg, and this is Generation Bold, the Fountain of Truth. The Fountain of Truth about aging. And we're going to touch on a topic today that is unusual for us. In a usual way. We talk a lot about the aging brain. We talk about its structures. We had very recently one of our favorite shows, most listened to shows, which is How Not to Stop Driving as You Got Older. And actually, our guest was the founder of Posit Science, talking about brain games and being able to think faster and keep your hand-eye coordination. So we talk a lot about the function of the aging brain, but very infrequently, maybe never, have we actually had somebody who is board certified in psychiatry by the American Board of Psychiatry and Neurology, and we have that today. And his name is Dr. Timothy Jennings. He has a very fascinating take and a great devotion to the issue of what it means to be older with regard to your mental health. You may not know, but you will know if you are a newsletter subscriber, that the Global Wellness Summit this year is promoting a moonshot for mental wellness. Now, this is a new focus, and those of you who have attended already many of our webinars or even our four-day conference, which was virtual this year, hopefully will be virtual and in Washington, D.C. next year, on Metabesity, knows that we touched on the topic of psychiatry and mental health. But this year, we plan to deal with psychiatry and aging directly. And that's why I'm so pleased to have Dr. Jennings with me today. Now, Dr. Jennings, when we talked for just a second before the show, I asked you, my audience knows I always ask, what's the most important thing you want to bring out? And explain to everybody what you said and why you said this is so important for people to know.
Well, Adrienne, thanks for having me and thanks for the question. The most important thing for people to know is that dementia is not normal aging. Dementia is pathological aging. Something is wrong in our physiology and our biology if we ultimately lose our mental abilities and faculties. And so the idea with that then is we can begin identifying in life actions that we can take to prevent that damaging physical cascade that affects our brain so that we can maintain our faculties, our abilities as we age.
Now, you know, once I heard one of the great leading geroscientists say, just do what your mother told you to do, and you'll be fine. And what he meant was eat right, exercise, all the kinds of things that we know we should do, even if we just watch television programs on health, but we don't do it. Now, we think about that more involved with our biology and our body. Is that true also of our mental health? I mean, are there simple things that we can do to intervene in this?
Now, this is a great question. And our brains are the physical structure inside of our skull, but our minds are more analogous to, say, a computer's software. Brain would be like the hardware, the machine. The mind would be like the software, the programming, but they're very fluidly interactive. And so the mind, our thought patterns, the things we watch, the beliefs that we hold, the attitudes, whether they're compassionate or hateful attitudes, our brains then react to that, and different pathways in our brains will activate. And if we fire them repetitively, then they become pathways that become entrained. So we've developed habit patterns. For instance, if you were to decide to take a new language that you currently don't speak and you studied that language, that is not a decision of your brain. That's a decision of your person, your individuality, your mind. But if you do it, then your brain begins making pathways. And if you keep practicing, they become wired in and you become fluent in that language. And we can actually see structural changes in the brain when you do that. But if you stop speaking that language over time, the pathways will prune back. This is true for all activities in life. And thus, if we identify those activities that are healthy for us mentally, psychologically, relationally, emotionally, we develop healthier brain pathways. If we engage in practices that are stressful, conflictual, hostile, they develop negative pathways and they have a negative cascade on our brain health over time.
So, you know, it's very interesting, Dr. Jennings. I have been taking a course on language and the brain. And it's so interesting that you had selected that issue of language, because of everything that I've studied, the idea that the brain is plastic, that we can add neurons through exercise or, as you would say, pathways, neurological pathways, is true. And it's very difficult to believe it, but it is true. And when we talk about sitting as a couch potato, there's also a couch potato issue for the brain. Now, when we come back, we're going to talk a lot about some of those day-to-day things that we can do. But before we go on to our next segment, you've written about this, you've talked about it, you speak on this. Tell people where they can start to learn more. I think it's comeandreason.com, but let us know more about where they can follow you and your work.
So, yeah, much of my work, blogs, videos, lectures, all free resources are our ministry website called comeandreason.com, but also have the book, The Aging Brain, Proven Steps to Prevent Dementia, which is available at any bookseller if people are interested in that.
All right, so now let's make one distinction that I think is very important, because in a way, our podcast is a learning institution. I think people do make a big mistake when they confuse dementia with Alzheimer's and aging with dementia, and therefore with Alzheimer's. The brain does change. It gets a little slower, a little bit more crystallized intelligence, in other words, wisdom, and a little less fluid intelligence, in other words, speed in learning. That's a lot different from dementia, and dementia is different from Alzheimer's disease. So can you give us a few definitions here?
Yes, dementia is the functional loss of ability, memory loss plus one of our domain losses, for instance, memory loss with language loss or normal motor ability, like the ability to tie your shoes or button your shirt, or loss of ability to recognize objects, like you see a chair, but you don't recognize it as a chair, or loss of executive ability, organized planning, being able to follow a recipe or balance your checkbook. If you have memory loss plus one of those four domain losses, that's the functional syndrome of dementia. Anything that damages the brain can cause those functional losses, can cause dementia. So vascular disease with strokes can cause vascular dementia. Alzheimer's disease causes Alzheimer's dementia, Parkinson's disease, Parkinson's dementia, and so forth.
So I want everybody to know, because you don't know this probably, Dr. Jennings, but I'm what they call a financial gerontologist. Money and aging is where my books go. So I want you to know that what Dr. Jennings just gave you was the exact definition that insurance companies use. So if you guys out there, just as a little aside, happen to have long-term care insurance, just what he told you has to happen for you to collect. Because under long-term care insurance, you can collect if you don't have a physical problem. But if you do have a mental issue, and that issue is dementia, defined exactly what you just heard. So it's a memory loss issue. Now, this is very scary, Dr. Jennings, and I'll tell you why. We all have it. Pregnant women, young pregnant women, have more lapses of memory than any other group, and yet we call it a senior moment. What do you say in the few seconds before the end of our break? What do you say to people who call every memory lapse a senior moment?
Well, so the little losses of memory that we all have from time to time are not the same thing as dementia memory loss. That type of memory loss is progressive and persistent. But we can have times where we don't remember as well because of sleep deprivation, because of intoxication, because of a medical condition like pregnancy, and that's often interrupting sleep, and that's why they're not remembering, because memories consolidate in sleep. We can talk about sleep and its importance in brain health and memory further in the show if you'd like. But people need to not confuse periodic moments in their life where they're not as sharp with their memory with a progressive and persistent loss of memory over time.
Well, that's wonderful, and that also may roll back some of the ageism, because every time somebody says, I've had a senior moment, they're convincing the listener that as you get older, you get demented, and this is exactly the opposite of what's true. What is true? Well, we're going to find out. Don't you forget to come back. We will be with you in just a moment.
You may think that I'm full of it, but that doesn't bother me not even a bit, because I am happy, and I freely admit I'm inappropriate for my age. Da-da-da-da, da-da-da-da.
Okay, this was great. You see how it goes now, right? So we're going quickly into our next section. This time I am going to ask you a question about psychiatry and aging, and you'll see how I set that up, and then we'll go on to what does happen to the brain as we age. And are we ready to rock and roll?
You may think that I'm full of it, doesn't bother me not even a bit, cause I am happy, and I freely admit I'm inappropriate for my age.
And we are here today with Dr. Jennings. He is a board certified psychiatrist. We're talking about the aging brain. We'll give you more information on where to follow him and his wonderful book. And he is involved and founder of Common Reason Ministries. It's dedicated to helping you learn to discern, to stimulate your brain, and not to believe that because you are aging, you must decline. And it has a great deal to do, I tell everybody, it does have a great deal to do with belief. It certainly is a spiritual ministry. We'll talk about that a little bit later on. But what I want to ask you now, Dr. Jennings, is this. People know that I speak a lot about my own family, my own private life with regard to aging. And my mom came to me. My mom passed at 92. She came to me in her 80s. And she said something to me that was so shocking, I couldn't believe it. She said, I'm getting counseling. You know, this was a woman who was born at a time when if you had a mental issue, it was a shame. You didn't tell anybody. And yet, she realized that she was getting depressed. And she went to counseling, and it was an intervention kind of counseling, and she did very well. And she was able to stop, eventually, this intervention kind of short-term counseling. I will tell you that had she gone to a doctor, she would have been given lithium or Valium or something like that, pepper pill. So what is this interface between aging and psychiatry? Because I think that this idea that we become demented, that there's nothing you can do about it, that we're supposed to be depressed when we age, results in a lot of over-medication. That's my take on it, but I haven't spoken to you about it. I'd like to know how you feel about this.
Well, you know, you brought up several really interesting issues that that kind of come together. As people age, they have a lot of new variables that put them at risk for mental decline, not just from dementia. As people age, they may have financial difficulties as they retire out of their job but don't have the same income. As people age, they may lose a spouse in death and have to go through the grief issues. As people age, they will lose some physical abilities as the body just gets older, and they may not be able to do some of the things they love to do, maybe a skier can't ski anymore. And so there are changes that come, and then ultimately as people age, they face the ultimate fear, existential anxiety that many people have written about, the fear of death and dying and the meaning in life. And so the opportunity to reflect on one's life people struggle with as well. So there's a lot of variables that come in. And then you add in the physical health problems where anytime as people age, their body has more pain, arthritis and aches and pains. They don't sleep as well. So many variables come in that can push people toward mental exhaustion, depression, discouragement, worry, anxiety. And so understanding and being able to bring interventions to people that can help them cope with those life changes and or stressors can be very helpful. Medication, as you pointed out, as a single intervention or a magic bullet just really is not the case. And just throwing medicines at everybody's problems kind of ubiquitously or blindly is not really often helpful. That doesn't mean there aren't places where medicines can be quite helpful, but you have to be very careful in the older population because oftentimes those medications can cause problems rather than relieve problems. So you have to be very judicious in the use of medications in the elderly.
Yes, I'll tell you that again with my mother at the a little bit toward the end. They gave her a lot of steroids, and she had hallucinations from it in the hospital, and they took it off. And that should never have been, because steroids of that nature are very, very difficult for the older body to take, and it does affect mentally. So all of this is a vast topic. And as you say, there are other things that can be done and that we maybe should be doing on a daily basis practice. So what are some of the things, other than popping a pill, if we're feeling that we've changed, maybe it is the depression that comes with loss, maybe it is simply that we are bored now, particularly because if we're older and we're sequestering during COVID, there's all kinds of things that are impacting our mental health right now. What are some of the things and habits that we may be able to cultivate that are really successful, not just, you know, pie in the sky, do an affirmation and you'll feel better kind of thing?
Well, one of the things that's been looked at is the mindset that people have, their mindset about themselves. And one of the ideas that has gotten into the mindset of most Americans since the 1960s is this idea that you retire at age 65. You work, but at 65 you retire, and life begins to end at 65. This is a very false idea, and it is a destructive idea. If you are active and engaged in life, and at 65 you retire and you go home and you turn on the TV and you get out the snacks and you put your feet up and sit on the couch, that is a recipe for acceleration of decline. You just will slide right into disability, health problems, and death. One can retire from a job, but not retire from living. And the idea being is that life does not end at 65. You stay active, you stay engaged, even if you're not employed for a paycheck. If we have a mindset that life is still vibrant and we stay active in that life, the active people are the ones who live longest and have the least disabilities. It's the inactivity that can be quite damaging to us. So I want to encourage people to have a mindset. And then when the realities of life cause us to have to be limited in some way, instead of focusing on what we can no longer do, let's say the skier who can't ski, we continue to expand ourselves into new activities we've never tried before that we can still do, or embrace and enjoy those activities we can still participate in. One of the things that really accelerates people into depression is when they have lost some aspect of their previous ability and they focus exclusively on that loss, and they stay stuck on that loss. And instead of focusing on all the other areas and domains of life still open to them.
Yeah, you know, narrowing your life is the worst thing you can do. And I'm going to say that this is a very holistic conversation. One of my main issues, and one of the reasons I actually do the show, is that I feel that here in the West, and I'm really going to say everywhere, as I study Africa and as I study the Middle East, there's no place for older adults. This idea of the sage, of wisdom, that you have a major contribution, is gone with the wind. And it's very difficult to do what you say. You know, it's so true, but there are now life purpose coaches, Dr. Jennings. There are people spending money to learn the next stage or next phase of their life. One of our stellar speakers, probably America's leading gerontologist, Dr. Kenneth Dykewald, just did a PBS show on life purpose, and his new book came out all about finding your life purpose. It's hard. After there is no more kids to bring up, there's no more work to be done that's compensated, creating your next stage. So I'm pretty sure that when you work in your ministry, this is something you see. People who say, you're right, doctor, I want to do this, but what should I do, lick envelopes in the back of a nonprofit? I have so much to give and nobody who wants to take it. This is a big problem for me. And I feel blessed because I've been a radio broadcaster for so long. It's something that you could do sitting down. I always laugh. It's something you could do sitting down. So even if you can't ski, which I never could, by the way, you can continue to do that. But a lot of people are in professions and have expertise where they can't continue it. And I'm going to be very curious to hear what you have to say. And we will be right back and get a pencil and paper, because we're going to take down the name of Dr. Jennings' book, Don't You Go Anywhere.
You may think that I'm full of it, but that doesn't bother me, not even a bit, because I am happy, and I freely admit I'm inappropriate for my age. Da-da-da-da.
Okay. I was talking long there because we were going for 32 seconds break.
You.
I didn't want to get you cut off, but you can see what I'm going to start with, and you'll go right on, okay? So we're ready,
sure.
Stu.
Perfect. You may think that I'm full of it, but that doesn't bother me, not even a bit, because I am happy, and I freely admit I'm inappropriate.
And hello, hello, hello. This is Adrienne Berg, and this is Generation Bold, the Fountain of Truth. The Fountain of Truth about aging. Let me give you a little bit of business. Simply go to my website, which is Adrienne Berg, A-D-R-I-A-N-E-B-E-R-G, adrienneberg.com. Sign up for our free newsletter, and you will get hints and tips every single Monday on successful aging, invited to free events that are very important. That you would not be able to have access to, gerontology events, geroscience events, anything that is new and cutting edge and trendy. Yeah, we're there, even for the trendy stuff. So if you have an interest in your own future at any age, let's even call it Aging for Beginners, like the name of my blog, you can simply go to adrienneberg.com and also tell a friend. Now, we're here today with Dr. Timothy Jennings, and he is a psychiatrist, and he has obtained a degree, and this is something important to me because I want to tell you that he got his degree in 1990. That was before aging was cool. Aging didn't become cool till about 10 years ago, for the very reason that he mentioned, that Dr. Jennings mentioned. You're supposed to get old at 65, go play golf, and be quiet, and that's if you have money. Otherwise, you just disintegrate. Now we've got the baby boomer generation, 78 million people who have some money, are the most educated cohort in history, most educated. And now we're great, we're healthy, we got longevity, and we've got nothing to do. And Dr. Jennings says that could be a mental issue. So first, again, Dr. Jennings, tell people how to find you and your book and what you tell in your ministry, in your work, to help this finding life purpose, you know, issue that we seem to have, the third life or third stage crisis, not the midlife crisis.
Right. No, that's a great question. Now, our resources are at comeandreason.com, and my book, The Aging Brain, Proven Steps to Prevent Dementia, is available at any bookseller, Amazon. You can get it pretty much anywhere. So regarding the question, though, of life not ending and what do we do as we transition is, first and foremost, we have to, you know, take ownership for ourselves and recognize that we can't depend on others to give us those opportunities. And we need to take that ownership and exercise our authority over ourselves, our power of choice, to pursue activities that are meaningful and valuable to us, that we have a mindset of activity and engagement. And that could be in a workplace, but it could be that we take up a greenhouse in our backyard or gardening in our yard, and we're going to have the best rose garden in the community, and we become very much involved in that. We stay active and engaged in something that's meaningful and valuable to us. We are designed for productivity, for achievement, and we get a sense of fulfillment and validation when we apply our energies in something that, and through all stages of life, early and late, one of the elements that has been shown to be always helpful, always healing, and always protective is social connections, community, with caring people. And to the degree we fracture, that's family, that can be a religious community, can be your neighborhood, but to the degree we fracture those connections and we isolate people, it has a significant damaging effect on mental and physical health. And multiple studies have demonstrated this before COVID, and a few have already come out during the COVID time that show, especially in the elderly, when they're socially isolated, they have worse physical and mental health than when they're in community. And it's in community that we get an opportunity not only to care about others, but to be cared about and valued, and to put our resources, our own talents and abilities to use. And so I would suggest that historically people stayed active after retirement in their families and extended families, but also in their church or church communities or religious communities and neighborhoods. And we need to continue to value that and give people those opportunities.
You know, some interesting connections are being made as you speak. I also look a lot at real estate. And when I say real estate, I mean senior housing. I used to call it facilities, and then all the social workers got mad at me. They said, don't you call it that. These are communities. And, of course, they are communities. But recently I've been seeing some interesting things, and that is we'll say senior housing, assisted livings, even nursing homes, which have affinity groups for volunteering. So it's not so, and of course, active adult communities, what we would call the over 55s, where the usual would have been to do something. The usual would have been to do something like play golf or play tennis or get together and do walks. So these are all wonderful things; they're very important physically. But instead, they are, how do we help the local children, or how do we teach people who have come from another country better English, and many, many other things. I mean, as you say, even the barter gardens, where people do create their own gardens, but they grow too much food, and they give that to a food bank deliberately. So there is such a new thing now, this life purpose. Now, when people come to you, whether it's to you personally or through the ministry, do you see that they're hurting for life purpose, or is it the usual things like depression and maybe some dementia?
Well, both, of course. I mean, you've got when you talk about the population, you've got people coming from all different problems, backgrounds, and concerns. And so you have both of those types of things, some coming with specific personal health needs, others struggling to find where they fit with a major life change that they've struggled with. So you find both going on. And the studies, though, show, you talk about this volunteerism, there's actual science on this. People who volunteer in their community, just as you've described in various outlets like that, as they age, as they volunteer, compared to people who don't volunteer, and after accounting for variables like baseline health, educational level, smoking and not smoking, you account for those variables, the volunteers live longer, have less disability, less depression, and stay out of nursing homes longer and less dementia than those who don't volunteer. So there's something very healthy. And neurobiologically, when we volunteer, we activate circuits of the brain that are associated with compassion and empathy, which sends a calming signal down to the brain's stress circuitry, and we actually have less stress on our bodies. And this is probably why people end up having better health and less disability.
You know, very interesting. I'm going to break my rule. I'm going to talk about religion for a minute because it relates to what you just said as well. There are studies. We actually have a drop-in that deal with those studies. We've played it many times. That if you are going for a heart operation, a blocker, or you know any of these things, I won't say a transplant, but something that's more usual, you have a better chance of emerging healthy if you do two things. This is what the studies show. One is you have a lot of stuff on your calendar. You're very busy, all right? Like you just said, you volunteer, you have to get there, you got to tend the garden, you have to do this and that. The other is if you pray. And it's very interesting to see these. Well, of course, the geroscientists say that they will look at the brain and they're able to actually have electrodes at the brain to show that both have very calming influences and they just make you stronger and increase your immune system as you go into an operation. So this is the scientific connection here. But you really also bring a spiritual connection. I think it's only fair to give you a chance to say a few words about that when we come back, because there's more and more research, more and more hard research about this. We have a holistic issue here. We don't see our brain, our mind, nature, our health, our environment, even the home in which we live and what our kitchens and bathrooms look like as all one thing. They are. They're one piece. And they're all about successful aging. So don't go anywhere. And we'll bring one unique piece to this in a moment, and that's the piece of spirituality. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back.
You may think that I'm full of it, but that doesn't bother me not even a bit, because I am happy, and I freely admit I'm inappropriate for my age. Da-da-da-da.
Okay, so this is our last segment. And before I launch into it, I want to ask you, is there anything else that you would like to bring out on any level that we missed?
Oh, no, there's so much on this topic. I've written an entire book on it. So, no, we're doing great, and this is a great focus to close up on. So this is great.
Right, but now let's just go back to the book for a minute. The book is about very specific about preventing dementia. And
Yes. We've
covered things like life purpose and volunteerism and not, you know, thinking that 65 is the end. But if you, again, at one point from the book, I'll ask you, you don't have to tell me now, I do want to bring that out because I think people, I don't think they feel they have any control over dementia. I think that's a big issue. So, okay, let's go, Stu, we're ready.
You may think that I'm full of it, but that doesn't bother me not even a bit, because I am happy, and I freely admit I'm inappropriate for my age. Da, 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 da.
And hello, 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 this is Adrienne Berg, and this is Generation Bold, the Fountain of Truth, the Fountain of Truth about Aging. And very quick business. Go to my website, Adrienne Berg, adrianneberg.com, and just become a member of our newsletter tribe, new word, and you will get every Monday the hints and tips on aging that have been most unique for me that people send me all the time and great organizations send me, and I just don't have time to discuss it on a one-hour show. But it comes to you every single week. It also, you will discover, invitations always free to everything from great entertainment to geroscience programs that I think you should be aware of and you would not be able to know about pretty much in any other way, unless you were in the field of geroscience, gerontology, aging, etc. Now, today, you're hearing from Dr. Timothy Jennings. He's an author with regard to dementia and how you can actually do exercises, do things in your own day-to-day life to prevent the decline of your brain as you age. We'll talk a little bit about his book a little bit further in a moment. But before that, I want to get to an issue that's a kind of tough issue. And that is, now remember, Dr. Jennings is dedicated to helping people. He is a psychiatrist, but he's also a minister. And he's with Come and Reason Ministries, where he combines the issue of reason, rationality, a strong mind, volunteerism, doing good in the world, and belief. So that's kind of interesting. Not every psychiatrist has that same take, but you came to that in some way. Can you just tell us a little bit more about that?
Well, I came to that because I realized that while we have power over what we believe, we can choose our beliefs. Once we form our beliefs, those beliefs exercise power back over us. And in many science and shows, that where they're talking about the placebo effect, or whether certain beliefs that people hold can cause them to have physical health outcomes that are different if they believe differently about it. In fact, surgeons will not do surgery on a patient who's convinced they're going to die in surgery, because there's actual evidence that they have a much higher rate of dying in surgery if they're convinced they're going to. So the idea being that we want to have healthy beliefs, and the healthier our beliefs, then the healthier the impact those beliefs have upon us.
Now let's go to your book, because your book is infused with some of those important things. As I said during the break, one of the reasons that this book is so important is that we don't believe we have any control, particularly over dementia. You know, if somebody was asked, could you control getting a heart attack? They might say, yeah, you know, I can eat a Mediterranean diet, I can exercise every day, I can reduce the chances that I'll have a heart attack. What about dementia? Oh, I can't do anything about that. That just happens. It's going to happen to me. It happened to my mother. Whatever it is, nothing I could do. But this book is exactly the opposite. So tell us a little bit about some of the, I call them hints and tips, but it's bigger than that, of what they'll find when they read it.
Well, what they'll find is an action plan at the end of each chapter that they can apply to their life that can help them actually prevent the late onset Alzheimer's type. The reason I wrote this book is my mother-in-law died of Alzheimer's dementia, which puts my wife at higher risk. And so I got very serious a few years back about really digging into the science and the evidence and formulating an action plan for my own wife who applies this to her life. And the data is very strong. If you make the right lifestyle choices, even if you have a family history of Alzheimer's dementia, you will not progress to Alzheimer's dementia. Multiple studies show this to be true. And the interventions, you've mentioned some of them, an exercise program in which you walk as little as 20 to 30 minutes five times a week. In people over age 65, we could see growth in the memory circuits of the brain that made those individuals, after a couple of months of walking, their brains appear 2 years younger, and they had 2% growth in the memory circuits of their brain. And functionally, they had better memory as well. So that's multiple studies show this. So in the book, you've got sections on exercise. You've got sections on sleep and what healthy and normal sleep looks like. You'd be surprised at how many people don't understand what normal sleep looks like and how important that is on memory. There's a whole section on food and food choices that are harmful to our brains and can give us greater risk of dementia, as well as food choices that can be protective and reduce our risk of dementia and actually increase lifespan if we select the right foods. So that's what the book is about.
Now, you know, we have had, this is, again, this holistic approach, we've had geroscientists from the NIA. The NIA stands for the National Institute of Aging, but a lot of people, Dr. Jennings, call it the National Institute of Alzheimer's. Why? Because all the federal money is going to Alzheimer's. And it's not working. They are simply not looking at those amyloid proteins and getting anywhere. So what they're doing now, and this is so fascinating with regard to your book, they now have a different kind of clinical trials where they're looking at prescription exercise, where a doctor will actually prescribe exercise. Now, wealthy people, they're going and they're spending money on longevity clinics and all that kind of thing, and they're getting these you know, individualized designer lifestyles, whether it's nutrition and what they eat and all that. It's very Hollywood. But this is the NIA. And they're saying exactly what you are saying. Exactly.
Yeah, but what's interesting about what you just said, I have a concern. It'd be interesting to see what comes of the study. And that's because the data on exercise shows that it's not just doing the physical calorie burn of the exercise, but our mindset. If we choose an exercise we don't enjoy, we get it as a person, we're obliged to do it, and we're slogging through and we're going, okay, I can't wait till this is done. We have a very negative mental attitude, and there's data out there that shows that actually prevents us from having all the benefits of the exercise because we're activating the brain stress circuitry, which is kicking up catecholamines and stress hormones like glucocorticoids that could actually undermine the protective benefits that the normal exercise would do. So in my book, I actually show that evidence as well and tell people they not only need to have exercise, but they need to choose an exercise they enjoy.
Right. And you know, there are issues. There are people who with endorphins kick in, which is a good feeling. And I'm one of those. And what I've noticed, and I want everybody to know that this may help them, that when I don't exercise for a while, the endorphins take much longer to kick in and takes much longer for me to feel good. And I say I don't like to exercise. When I exercise on a regular basis, those endorphins kick in very quickly, and I'm feeling great. The minute I lift a weight or start to do aerobics or whatever it is. So you can't stop. And one of the problems, Dr. Jennings, I have found, and I don't know how you help people on this, is because we do get stopped. We get pneumonia. We get flu a little bit more than anybody else. We're older. We get interrupted in our good habits a little bit more. And we have to get back on the horse. So what would you say inspirationally to help us get back on the horse when we get stopped?
You know, that's a great question. I don't know that I have a magic answer. I have that problem when I travel. Travel will throw me off,
yes.
And then I've got to get back on it. It's just understanding the value and having a commitment to it, to my own wellness, to the wellness from being there for my family, to wanting to maintain my ability to understand the key importance, establishing routines and habits, just like brushing your teeth, that your exercise just becomes part of your routine habits that, a long flight might throw you off from brushing your teeth, but you get right back in it as soon as you can.
Right, and if you are in a hospital for a short period of time, or you just laid up for a short period of time, or that shoulder went again, that is no excuse. No excuses. We got to be tough love
nope.
here. Yep. So we thank you so much. This has been a really great breakthrough, I think, at our own show, because we do have very negative beliefs about our ability to control decline, particularly mental decline. I think the wellness industry has convinced us that we have some control of our physicality and longevity. But now you're here to fight the other part of the fight, which is we also have control over our healthy brains. So thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you, Adrian.
And we're at the end of the show, but you know what I'm going to tell everybody? Get out there, kids, or stay in if you have to during COVID, and make it happen.
I'm inappropriate.
Okay, well, this was a terrific show. It's going to air in a couple of weeks. We'll send your public relations person a link. Use it any way you want. Belongs to you. We also make a quick little 2-minute video of your words, just 2 minutes
okay.
of it. And why do we do it? Because you can put it on YouTube, or you can post it on any social media, and people listen to it. Your words light up in colors, so it's like a little video of what you're saying, and then they can go listen
I would love to get that. Thank you.
It's fun, and then you get the whole show, and then of course we put it on our website, and it goes to all the podcast disseminators, you know, like Stitcher and Google Podcasts and Apple and all that. So it gets nice play.
Thank you so much.
And this is wonderful.
Yeah,
we'll
put it out on our platforms as well.
Yeah, well, that's, you know, what we ask of our guests is only that they promote themselves, and then people know that our show is there. So it's great.
Yeah, exactly.
We get more
yep.
annoyed. Thank you. Take care.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.